Hello and welcome to Progressive Devilry. I'm your host, Stella. Now, normally, I don't put a lot of content out, and instead focus on local races and local candidates to help you make an informed choice on who is the least dangerous for our community in North Central Washington. This year is a little different because national issues are starting to seep into our community. Some of that has to do with it being an election year, but there's something more to it as people have become more and more radicalized, especially on the right. So emboldened, in fact, that they are writing and publishing manifestos in how they plan to dismantle our democracy and install a dictator to prop up their evangelical Christian theocracy. And there was just an attempt on former President Donald Trump by a registered Republican voter. To be clear, we at Progressive Devilry reject any kind of political violence. Now, before I get started, I do want to be transparent. Right now, I am working for the Washington Coordinated Campaigns to help amplify Democratic representatives locally in North Central Washington. This is the first time I have accepted money from anyone in the political sphere ever. I also want to be clear that they do not have any interest in Progressive Devilry and are not paying me to make content. In fact, I have been told specifically that if I am to continue to make content while working for them, that it needed to be on my own time. So, none of Progressive Devilry's content is paid for by any political party and never has been. The coordinated campaigns also do not persuade anyone. They are just about getting out the vote, regardless of who votes. Getting involved in our democracy is the emphasis. Everything I say is my own personal opinion and only representative of myself and the Progressive Devilry channel. So, with that disclaimer out of the way, here we go. In our last video, we talked about the Dominionist flag, its significance, and the alt-right co-opting of it for their own purposes as a dog whistle. If you didn't watch that video, you should. It does have some relevance before talking about Project 2025, because we now know that Dominionists feel called by their God to take over every aspect of our nation, from the government, our education system, and our social structures, like our family. You can read a great article about the Seven Mountains mandate written by our local intrepid reporter, Dominic Bonney, in the sources section. He details how this mandate is a basis for how local churches like Grace City have woven this calling into every fabric of their ministry, which is important when prominent political candidates locally, like former disgraced Chelan County Sheriff Brian Burnett, attend there. This is all relevant because Project 2025 is a comprehensive plan on how to accomplish that calling and how to dismantle our society and how to recreate it into their Christian totalitarian hellscape image. So, what is Project 2025 and why should you care? There are a lot of YouTube videos out there explaining what it is, and I'll link some of the informative ones in the sources because I did watch some of them. What our focus is going to be with this video is why it should matter to you and how, if the far-right MAGA faction were to succeed, it would affect you locally. So, we are calling this episode the Top 5 Scariest Things about Project 2025. Project 2025 is a more than 920-page initiative authored by various administrators of the Heritage Foundation. It is an overall plan and playbook for the next conservative administration. And if Trump wins in November, that means January 2025, hence the name of the project. It is comprehensive, which is why it's so long. Add to the fact that not many people want to read 900 pages of anything, especially with a generation of voters that are used to small bites of information sharing. If you haven't heard of the Heritage Foundation, they are an alt-right think tank that promotes right-wing conspiracies, propaganda, and policy. So it should be no surprise that they are behind the project. We are going to count this down from scary to outright terrifying. There are four parts of Project 2025: the mandate for leadership, the conservative promise, the personnel database, the training academy, and lastly, the one we will be focusing on, the 180-day playbook. Because while reading and talking about their tenets, beliefs, plans to identify, utilize, and install right-wing ideologues at every level of employment in the White House to prop up in their fanatical plans is scary. It's what they are planning to do that is the real problem. It is to be noted that while former President Trump has distanced himself from Project 2025, there are still some similarities between his personal policy plan, Agenda 47, where he promises to crush the deep state. I'm going to do my best to include page numbers for all of these references so you can look up and confirm them yourself. The link for the document on the Project 2025 website is in the links, so you know we didn't edit or doctor the text. They are saying these things with their full chest. The foreword sets the tone for the entire document, and on book page 4, document page 38, it says, "The next conservative president must make the institutions of American civil society hard targets for woke culture warriors." This starts with deleting the terms sexual orientation and gender identity, SOGI, diversity, equity, inclusion, DEI, gender equity, gender equality, gender equity, gender awareness, gender sensitive, abortion, reproductive health, reproductive rights, and any other terms used to deprive Americans of their First Amendment rights out of every federal rule, agency, regulation, contract, grant, regulation, and piece of legislation that exists. Just let that sink in for a minute. Despite the fact that, you know, the First Amendment isn't about not having consequences for the things you say, it's about not getting arrested for the things you say. So let's move on. It then immediately compares these things to pornography. Pornography, manifested today in the omnipresent propagation of transgender ideology and sexualization of children, pornography should be outlawed. The people who produce and distribute it should be imprisoned. Educators and public libraries who purvey it should be classed as registered sex offenders. And telecommunications and technology firms that facilitate its spread should be shuttered. This conflation of transgender identities as a sexualization of children and comparing them to pornography, which should be punished with imprisonment, will be important later. But this right here is the tone that the foreword sets for the document, already deeming a marginalized community as dangerous to children and society as a whole, and expressing openly that they should be imprisoned. So, with that tone set, we are going to start with number 5. Number 5 is trade, which is woefully out of touch. There was a lot that was wrong with the entire document, but there were a few things that stood out to me, not as just out of touch, but showing the deep amount of white privilege associated with authoring a document like this. You can tell the people who wrote this document have never worked in an orchard or on a farm. One of which is saying that Americans as a whole have plenty of money, inferring that if they don't, they're lazy. No other reason if they can't afford cell phones or big screen TVs. According to the document, Americans today can more easily afford everything from air conditioning to flat screen televisions and smartphones. And trade is one reason why. Bigger markets mean more specialization, more innovation ideas, more customers, and more people from whom to buy. America's official unemployment rate went as low as 3.5% during 2022, while real per capita gross domestic product, GDP, rose to an all-time record. Clearly, people who wanted to work were able to find work that paid well, even as manufacturing jobs grew more slowly than service jobs. Book page 800, document page 833. Their entire trade section is like this and totally bonkers. They think that we should just close the import-export bank. Talk about not understanding how trade works, especially locally for our agricultural farmers. A large amount of our apples are exported every year. Last year alone, we exported nearly 22 million cartons, according to the Fresh Fruit Portal. This year, we are down 18% compared to last year. It has been a steep decline since the Trump administration's tariffs that are still currently in place. The thing that the Heritage Foundation is missing here is that we would not be keeping the apples for our country, because we already sell more than enough here. Washington produces 50% of U.S. apples, and they are sold in more than 40 other countries. Could you imagine if trade was just shut off for apples in Washington? The only time the U.S. imports apples is if the crops are light, which does happen because of global warming. Apples do get sunburnt sometimes, like this season. 100-degree heat is terrible for apples at every stage of development. They actually admit on book page 802, document page 835, that the tariffs don't work, and that, of course, it's Biden's fault for leaving them in place. Not for the fact that Trump introduced them to begin with. They waffle back and forth, and they seem inconsistent on their trade policies, most likely to cause some confusion in case something fails, and they can say, that's not what they meant, but actually this other obscure part that countermands the original import-export closure. Moving on to number four. Education becomes inaccessible and a funnel for money to the military. Stafford student loans. They want to eliminate the public service loan forgiveness program, unsubsidized grad plus loans, and parent plus loans. That's on book page 354, document page 387. In fact, they want to remove power from the Secretary of Education. They want to eliminate accreditation agencies on book page 352, document page 387. They want to allow religious colleges and institutional places of learning to operate without any governance, unlike public institutions, which would definitely still be beholden to the state and federal government, where they want to remove regulations that prohibit intersectional abuses of marginalized people and remove requirements for DEI and sensitivity trainings for public institutions receiving federal funds. They want to allow states to privatize and select accreditation entities outside the Department of Education. That's on book page 354, document page 387. They want to privatize all student loans, book page 320, document page 353. And as to the military, on book page 102, document page 136, they would like to improve military recruiters' access to secondary schools and require completion of the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery, ASVAB. That's the military entrance examination, by all students in schools that receive federal funding. As in, if it's a private school, then the children would get a pass. Only public schools would be required for all of their students to take the ASVAB. But keep trans people out of the military for reasons, and strengthen chaplains protecting to proselytize to whoever they want in the military, which would essentially make the military another option for evangelical ministry. They want to reverse policies that allow transgender individuals to serve in the military. Gender dysphoria is incompatible with the demands of military service, and the use of public monies for transgender surgeries or to facilitate abortion for service members should be ended. So keep transgender people out of the military under all circumstances, make college so expensive and or inaccessible a standard civilian won't go, and then make it really easy for military recruiters to get your information and offer you probably college in exchange for service. Got it. Number three, stripping marginalized groups of their rights through redefining family. The second most used word in this document is family, coming in at over 160 times. The Heritage Foundation really wants its readers to know what a real family is. According to book page 451, document page 484, a family is comprised of a married mother, father, and child. They accuse the Biden administration specifically of subsidizing single motherhood, as if having any man in the household, married, not boyfriend, they do stipulate that, is incredibly important for a child, because evidently boyfriends are dangerous to children, as if marrying them somehow makes them no longer a threat. I hate to break it to you, Heritage Foundation, but if a man is dangerous as a boyfriend, marriage doesn't change that fact. There is a reason women are picking the bear. Now, this definition isn't just dangerous to the queer community, but anyone who doesn't want a permanent cisgender male partner. It will remove protections, subsidies, and tax deductions for single-income households that do not have both a married cisgender man and woman. This says nothing about single fatherhood, though. It only specifies single motherhood, of course, because cisgender men would never raise a child on their own, I guess. There is a lot throughout the document reinforcing their definition of what they think a family should be. But there is also specifically a focus on rolling back LGBT equity, like on book page 284, document page 317, where they specifically say that any protections should be repealed and replaced with incentives to create nuclear families, which we know they define as straight, cisgender man, woman, and child, effectively dismantling the entirety of queer families as they currently exist, dissolving marriages, protections, and equal protection under the law in one fell swoop. The Heritage Foundation also believes that Roe v. Wade's overturning was a win for their definition of families. They said, conservatives should gratefully celebrate the greatest pro-family win in a generation overturning Roe v. Wade. That's on book page 6, document page 39. Since they would force childbearing people to marry a man in order to survive in this hellscape, it makes sense why they would think that. But then there's their take on anti-discrimination laws. Book page 584, document page 617, they want to rescind regulations prohibiting discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, gender identity, transgender status, and sex characteristics. The president should direct agencies to rescind regulations interpreting sex discrimination provisions as prohibiting discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, gender identity, transgender status, sex characteristics, etc. This is just all of these things together is incredibly dangerous. It's scary because redefining family, then taking away the rights and protections for marginalized communities, and then also describing them as dangerous. Remember at the beginning when I said it would be important that they would be designate any discussion of queer and trans people as pornography and then criminalize that with imprisonment? So now people can discriminate for any reason. And if you even mention that you are queer, you could go to jail, feeding that private for-profit jail system. Not to mention if they decided to just say no woman can work, then they are reinforcing that you have to have a man in order to actually survive in the society. That rolls us into number two, because if dismantling the rights of an entire marginalized community in favor of propping up their own idea of family isn't enough, it gets worse. Number two, healthcare, vaccines and masks. I mean, because of course. The word vaccine comes up 45 times and the word mask 17. Of course, the vaccine and mask mandates are still an issue for them, but obviously not as much as abortion. There are some sources like Verify that say Project 2025 doesn't attempt to ban abortion, which is only technically true. The phrase ban abortion and abortion ban do not appear in the text. However, the word abortion appears 199 times in this document. Reproductive rights, 3 times. Reproductive health, 10 times. Healthcare, spelled correctly, only 7 times, with the words health and care with a space together showing up 99 times. And yes, they meant healthcare, one word, as in the system, not a provider's actions. But that's what you get when you want to defund public education. What they do very specifically say about abortion is the next conservative president should work with Congress to enact the most robust protections for the unborn that Congress will support while deploying existing federal powers to protect innocent life and vigorously complying with statutory bans on the federal funding of abortion. Book page 6, document page 39. So literally banning abortion and removing federal funding from providers that offer it. But wait, there's more. They say The Helms Amendment should continue to be applied, as it has been by both Republican and Democratic administrations for more than 50 years, as a complete ban on the use of taxpayer dollars to pay for abortions abroad. This might be a good spot to mention that the ban of taxpayer money being used for abortions abroad is almost certainly aimed at removing abortion access to U.S. military service members that are stationed overseas. So any cisgender woman who is serving and gets pregnant will be forced to carry the baby to term and be discharged from military service because they have basically changed their readiness without permission. They also say that language promoting abortion will be removed from the UN documents, policy statements, and technical literature. They also say abortion and euthanasia are not healthcare. The CDC's abortion surveillance and maternity mortality reporting systems are woefully inadequate. CDC abortion data are reported by states on a voluntary basis, and California and Maryland and New Hampshire do not submit abortion data at all, because the liberal states have now become sanctuaries for abortion tourism. The HHS, that's the Health and Human Services, should use every available tool, including the cutting of funds to ensure that every state reports exactly how many abortions take place within its borders, at what gestational age of the child, for what reason the mother's state of residence, and by what method. It should also ensure that statistics are separated by category: spontaneous miscarriage, treatments that incidentally result in the death of a child, such as chemotherapy, stillbirths, and induced abortions. In addition, the CDC should require monitoring and reporting for complications due to abortion in every instance of children being born alive after the abortion. Moreover, abortion should be clearly defined as only those procedures that intentionally end an unborn child's life. Miscarriage management or standard ectopic pregnancy treatments should never be conflated with abortion. All of that is on book page 455, document page 488. I'm going to stop right here for a minute and point out that the Heritage Foundation would like to basically do away with any kind of HIPAA protections and collect data about abortions to determine whether or not that they think it was an acceptable medical procedure. And this right here is why the healthcare segment is the number two most terrifying spot. What do you think they will do with that mandated information? Do you think they're going to just use it for statistics? The same people that refuse to tell anyone about their vaccination status wants to know the most private, intimate details and decisions you make with your doctor. Speaking as a person who has had two abortions myself, because I would have died otherwise, I find this horrifying. That someone I have never met would take my information and decide whether or not it was necessary for me to have a procedure or not to save my own life. While I grieved, while my body healed, mandated information provided without my consent. Banning the abortion pills. They want to reverse the approval of chemical abortion drugs, all of them, including generic forms, because in the last 20 years, they have supposedly been responsible for 26 deaths. That's on book page 458, document page 491. By that logic, we should definitely outlaw penicillin, which has caused around 500 deaths per year. These people, at the very least, want to limit the use of the pill to 49 days of gestation or less. Most people don't even know that they're pregnant at 49 days. They want to eliminate all vaccines and vaccine research that uses the same fetal cells that have been grown since the 60s based on two elective abortion procedures. So that's the majority of the vaccines that use the old way of research, like chickenpox, rubella, and MMR. Funnily enough, that does not include the COVID vaccine, though. That's on book page 461, document page 494. They want to revoke funding for Planned Parenthood and any abortion providers, regardless of reason, which is super interesting because before they said they wanted to call the procedure something else if it was some kind of miscarriage management, but it's the same procedure. So how exactly would you defund some clinics and not others if they provide the service? That's on book page 471, document page 505. And if you've defunded and closed all of the places that provide the service, where would you send someone for this miscarriage management when it is deemed appropriate? On book page 473, document page 506, they go so far as to say that no abortions are protected for any reason, and neither are the doctors that perform them. The next page, they go farther and say that the abortions do not always result in the death of the baby, but that they are left to die otherwise, which is just not true. And there is no evidence to suggest otherwise. No doctor would allow a viable life to die if there were any way to save them. In the same breath, they say that they would remove gender reassignment surgeries from Medicaid. So I guess fuck any parent who has an intersex baby born with no urethra openings, which happens often, by the way. When that happens, they are assigned female at birth and given a surgery to have a functional vaginal opening so that they are able to urinate. It really is like conservatives want to ignore the fact that intersex people exist, make up 1% of our population. And that's a lot. On book page 485, 46, document page 518, 519, it bans teaching abortions to medical practitioners. I think you get the idea with abortion, so I guess we'll move on quickly about the other Medicare, Medicaid stuff. Medicare is mentioned in the document more than 50 times, Medicaid more than 55. On book page 462, document page 496, they of course call Medicare and Medicaid entitlement programs. With Medicare, there is a lot, of course, but the biggest thing of note is that they want to repeal Medicare Part D, which is the negotiation of prescription prices, because the government installed caps on drug prices from the private sector. And of course, capitalist bootlickers like the Heritage Foundation don't want senior citizen drug prices capped. This first comes up on book page 465, document page 498, but continues as a main theme with their issue with Medicare. Regarding Medicaid, on book page 467, document page 500, they very specifically want to increase barriers to get Medicaid, make it harder to obtain for people who need it, and add work requirements, because you know how well that works for disabled people. No shock there. Sounds very similar to a certain German's solution for handling useless eaters. And here we are at number one. And the reason it's the scariest is because they could accomplish it on day one of the conservative presidency, which would start the ball rolling on the rest. Number one, Schedule F. Schedule F is mentioned five times in Project 2025, and it is an executive order to remove any non-performing employees in an administration and immediately replace them with people who align completely with the conservative agenda. So with the personnel database they've created and the training academy they've made and this 180-day playbook, well, it's actually possible they could hit the ground running with this manifesto. There's so much more about eroding the checks and balances and accountability and oversight for the executive branch that would make it all possible. But Schedule F is by far the most terrifying thing in this manifesto because it's how all of this starts. Everything else we talked about is what would happen if number one becomes reality. And it is possible. There is so much more. This can't even sort of be considered a comprehensive list in the slightest. This is just the five scariest things I found. As you read through this document, make sure to comment what you found most abhorrent. The president of the Heritage Foundation had this to say recently, which just puts a bow on this whole dystopian nightmare and drives home the seriousness in which he is approaching the revocation of our rights as U.S. citizens.
In spite of all this nonsense from the left, we are going to win. We're in the process of taking this country back, and we are in the process of the second American Revolution, which will remain bloodless if the left allows it to be.
Thanks for joining me on this journey. Next, we'll be talking more in depth about the racist roots of school choice, the Dominionist Moms for Liberty movement, the Seven Mountains Mandate, and specifically how all of these relate to Project 2025. Now, before I go, I do want to give a quick shout out to our subscribers. You've been helping me in my beer fund so I can hyperfocus and put words on a page to make these videos. So a quick thank you to Ellie Fox, Deborah Rogers, Anna Peters, Xander Sen, and Maggie Joya. Your support is absolutely amazing. Until next time, let's make progress.
Hit that subscribe button to stay updated with us. And any sources we've used in today's episode are below or are available on our website at progressivedevilry.com.